Let's talk now about aligning teacher practice. Now, the promise of an instructional framework is that we can use it to get on the same page about what professional practice looks like. But we have to be careful to do that in a way that respects teacher autonomy and that gets us aligned on the things that matter. And I was recently investigating this issue and came across a research report from 2008 by some authors that I have a great deal of respect for. And the report is called Tight But Loose: Scaling Up Teacher Professional Development in Diverse Contexts. And they directly tackle this issue of what alignment should really look like. Because on the one hand, we know alignment matters, and we want people to be rowing in the same direction, right? We want people to be working together, working toward common goals, using common approaches so they can learn from one another. But on the other hand, we don't want to micromanage. We don't want to have to police specific strategies and take away teachers' autonomy and say that everything has to be done exactly my way down to the finest detail. There is a sweet spot for alignment. And if we're going to obtain the benefits of alignment without the drawbacks of micromanagement, we have to make sure we're aiming for that sweet spot. So this report that I came across, I'm going to share some insights from, is very helpful in framing some of these issues and helping us avoid micromanagement. And this was a report based on the Assessment for Learning project from a number of years ago. And they articulated a very detailed theory of action. And I want to share with you two specific parts of that. We're not going to get into the details of what their study was about or what their professional development program was about. But their theory of action said that first, teachers learn extensively and deeply about minute-to-minute and day-by-day assessment for learning via an initial workshop and sustained engagement in teacher learning communities. So there was a professional development and learning community component that was designed to teach teachers in this project some specific strategies for using assessment for learning. The second component of their theory of action was that teachers would make minute-to-minute and day-by-day assessment for learning a central part of their everyday teaching practice by implementing the big idea and the five strategies of assessment for learning through judiciously chosen practical techniques. And I love that phrasing, judiciously chosen, because it highlights the reality that in order to implement a practice, teachers have to make decisions on their own, right? They cannot simply do what they were told in the training. They have to own their practice. They have to make those decisions for their students on an ongoing basis. And what really struck me as I reviewed this report was their organization and distinction between those three elements of practice. They said, you know, this assessment for learning project is really all about a big idea. And they've got that big idea in the diagram here. And then there are five key strategies that all teachers need to master and implement, but they implement them by choosing judiciously from a large repertoire of practical classroom techniques. So what they did not do in this project was give teachers the entire list of techniques and then go around with clipboards and count how many of the techniques teachers were using, or check off each technique and make sure that teachers were using all of them. That was not their approach, because they knew that teachers needed the flexibility and the autonomy to choose which strategies to use at any given time. Now, in order to still be implementing assessment for learning, the big idea had to be there, the five key strategies had to be evident, but they purposefully avoided the pitfall of micromanaging what teachers were doing. And we might find that we're in that trap of micromanaging if we find ourselves focusing too heavily on the visible aspects of teacher practice. You know, if it's on a clipboard, if it's on a checklist, if we're just looking to check it off and move along, then we might have fallen into what we call observability bias. And we might be missing the deeper aspects of teacher thinking and decision making that really matter. So, you know, if we do want to align on some surface level things, that's probably okay, but we have to recognize that they're surface level things. For example, if we all have the same hall pass policy in the school, that will be helpful to students, right? Creating consistency for students is good, and creating consistency about the strategies that we're using to help students learn, like Cornell Notes, right? If every teacher in your school is having you students use Cornell Notes, That's going to be helpful to students. But we have to recognize that it is a surface level alignment, and it's probably not at the heart of our improvement work, because the real work of teaching and the real work of improving teaching lies deeper beneath the surface. So what do we do if we want to avoid surface-only alignment? Well, first, we have to remember that teachers need autonomy in order to work as professionals. In order to do their jobs and meet students' needs, they need to be able to act with a certain degree of autonomy. And the main way that we oppose that autonomy or tamp down that autonomy as instructional leaders is when we tell people, you know what, you used technique X instead of technique Y, and you should have gone with Y. We micromanage and police the specific strategies that teachers are using and take away the autonomy they need to be flexible and to make decisions in the best interests of their students. And we really have to be careful about that. We really need to remember that it is not our responsibility to make those decisions moment by moment. You know, if we walk away and leave the teacher to teach on their own, we need things to not fall apart without us. We need to be not necessary moment by moment. And that means we need to trust and empower teachers to make those decisions. One more thing that I think we have to be careful about when it comes to surface-only alignment is aligning simply at the level of a buzzword. And this is where having an instructional framework can be incredibly powerful, because it creates a shared understanding that goes much deeper than the terminology, right? If all we said was, we're going to do assessment for learning, I want to see lots of assessment for learning in your classroom, well, we would have virtually no guarantee that everyone meant the same thing by that term, assessment for learning. So we've got to go deeper. We've got to be more specific, because simply using the same term does not ensure that we have a common understanding. In order to align around practice, we have to be much more specific. And in the Instructional Framework Development Program, which is available as a bonus training accompanying this program, you will see that to develop an instructional framework, we need to specify basically four things. We need to identify the practice itself. We need to break that practice into specific key areas. We need to identify the key characteristics of that practice. We need to identify how visible those practices are, or those elements are, and how long a period of time they play out, the visibility and zoom grid. And then we need to define four levels of performance for each of those characteristics. So again, we walk you through that whole process in the Instructional Framework Development Program. There's a workbook and some templates that you can use with your teachers to start identifying some of those shared expectations in depth and clearly, so that you're talking about the same thing and not just using the same buzzword or the same title. Now, one caution that I want to give you when it comes to alignment is to not align around the steps for doing something, right? As observers, we like to see the steps. As novices, we like to see the steps. When we're training people, we like to say, first do this, then do that, and then do the other part. Well, that only gets us so far, because there is inevitably going to be decision-making that needs to occur. And in order to truly train teachers on a practice, we need to familiarize them with the key dimensions that they're going to need to consider to make those decisions. So if you look at any good rubric for practice, it's not going to say the steps. It's not just going to say, first do this, then do that. It's really going to break it into the key areas. And that is going to help us avoid observability bias. And again, you might remember from the earlier modules of this program, observability bias is that tendency that we have to focus on what's easiest for us to observe and ignore the key decisions that teachers are making behind the scenes just because they're not visible to us. So we've got to get the insider's view of practice. And that means we have to talk about practice. We have to talk with teachers to truly understand what they are doing and to help them improve. So that brings us to the end of this section. Go ahead and grab your journal and think about alignment for a moment. Think about what you want to become tight but loose about when it comes to shared expectations. What are some big ideas within those shared expectations that really matter, that serve as the foundation of that alignment effort? And decide who it applies to, right? Is this for the entire staff? Is this for a particular department or a particular grade level? It is especially powerful to focus on things that don't apply to everyone, because you can be much more specific in meeting the needs of, say, the English department or the first grade team. There is huge power in focusing and zooming in. So don't feel like you have to include everybody in everything. What are the core ideas? What are the core practices, right? With Assessment for Learning, we saw that they had identified 5 core strategies. So what would those be for your alignment effort? And then what is the, you know, the kind of furthest tier out of alignment where you want people to have a shared repertoire of strategies, you want them to be trained and familiar and able to use those strategies flexibly, but you're not going to micromanage those and tell teachers that they used the wrong one or they should have made a different decision. You're going to protect that autonomy for teachers. What goes in that kind of tier of shared expectations? When you've done some thinking about that, you may again want to go directly to the Instructional Framework Development Program and start sketching out some ideas, or reach out to one of your teams and say, hey, could we start talking about aligning in this particular area of practice? And you'll find that teachers welcome those conversations. They want to be understood. They want to share that insider's view with you, and you will learn a ton from it that you can then use to help other teachers learn across the organization. That's it for this section. I will see you in the next section as we move through Module 6 of the Virtual Instructional Leadership Challenge.